Story goes, because always got to start with a story, just about always. Anyway, there was once this boy who liked this girl, and so he asked this girl to go to a formal school dance. Well, she agreed, and so he thought, hey, I need to look good for this. So he went to rent a tuxedo, but the rental store had this long line. And so he got in line, and he waited, and he waited, and he waited. He finally got a suit. He thought, wow, I need to go get some flowers, you know? So he decided to buy some flowers, of corsage, you know? But the flower shop had this long, long, long line, all these other guys waiting to get flowers. So he stood there and he waited and he waited and he waited until he finally bought the flowers. Well, after all that waiting, the boy and the girl finally went to the dance, but there was a long line into the dance. And so again, they waited and waited and waited and waited, and eventually they got inside the dance, and the boy offered to get the girl something to drink, and she asked for some punch. So he went to the drink table, and thankfully there was no punch line. Waka, waka, waka. All right, no punch line at the table, no punch line to the joke. But think about it. Do you realize how much time we spend our lives waiting? We wait a lot, don't we? You waited for that joke to end. Exactly. Yeah. It's been estimated that we spend about a third of our waking hours waiting. It might be waiting in line or waiting in traffic, waiting at the doctor's office, waiting for a phone call, waiting for test results. There's also waiting for things like graduations to happen, getting a job, waiting for the right man or woman to come into your life, waiting to start a family, or waiting to buy a house, or waiting to retire, and so on and so on. Then there are the spiritual kinds of waitings. Like, for example, waiting for your loved ones to come to Christ, or waiting for a prodigal to come home, or waiting for God to answer your prayer, or waiting for Christ's return. And I think that most of us would rather do anything other than wait. I don't like to wait. I always seem to have to do things, you know. It drives me kind of crazy to be still, you know. As a matter of fact, some people would rather do the wrong thing than wait. I don't fall into that category, but you know what I mean. But in many ways, the secrets of life involve learning how to wait, but wait in the right way. And what I mean by that is that a lot of people don't always wait in the right way. They do a lot of wrong things. Still, a lot of people think that waiting is nothing more than passive resignation, kind of like giving into your circumstances, throwing your hands up in the air and walking off the playing field, or if you're certain guys in sports, you take off your shirt and walk across the field or whatever. Anyway, but as a Christian, we don't wait on the Lord because we're giving up. Our waiting doesn't mean giving up. And that's because from a biblical perspective, waiting isn't passive. On the contrary, it's the most proactive thing that we can do. Think about it, to wait on the Lord means that we get out of the way so that the Lord can do whatever he needs to do. For example, Jesus stood before his accusers at the crucifixion, and he did not retaliate. Instead, he waited on the Father to accomplish his purposes. And he waited for the Father to dispense both mercy and justice. And it's with all that in mind that we're going to continue our sermon series from the book of James, A Faith That Works, and turn to our text over in James chapter 5, and we're going to read verses 7 through 12. James chapter 5, verses 7 through 12. There James writes, "Be patient then, brothers, until the Lord's coming. See how the farmer waits for the land to yield its valuable crop, and how patient he is for the autumn and spring rains. You too, be patient and stand firm, because the Lord's coming is near. Don't grumble against each other, brothers, or you will be judged. The judge is standing at the door. Brothers, as an example of patience in the face of suffering, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord. As you know, we consider blessed those who have persevered. You have heard of Job's perseverance and have seen what the Lord finally brought about. The Lord is full of compassion and mercy. Above all, my brothers, do not swear, not by heaven or by earth or by anything else. Let your yes be yes and your no be no, or you will be condemned. So what's going on here? Well, remember that James is writing to Christians way back in the first century who were rather poor and struggling and suffering and scattered all across the Roman Empire. Plus, these Christians have been abused, lied to, misused, and exploited. We talked some about that last week, especially people in powerful positions like wealthy landowners who ripped them off and stole their money and walked away laughing. They were simply at the mercy of the rich and powerful. They were struggling with all this and how the Lord was there, but yet nothing seemed to be happening, you know? They felt as though these rich and powerful people were just getting away with murder. And in some ways, it wasn't just figurative. It also happened quite literally. Sadly, they felt that there was nothing they could do about it. And so James writes to them, letting them know that there is actually something that they can do about it. But it involves learning to wait on the Lord. And that can be hard since waiting doesn't come naturally for most of us. Think about it. No one wants to wait when your loved ones are suffering or when you're being cheated. But in many cases, that's exactly what we have to do. We have to wait. And James shows us three ways to wait in our text, especially when hard times hit us. And the first way that we are to wait is to wait expectantly. Again, back in verses 7 and 8, James writes, "Be patient then, brothers, until the Lord's coming. See how the farmer waits for the land to yield its valuable crop, and how patient he is for the autumn and spring rains. You too be patient and stand firm because the Lord's coming is near." All right, so James has us thinking about farming. And I'll have to admit, until I moved like to Oklahoma, I was clueless about farming, right? But what I saw in farmers then and today is that it's really hard work, even with all the contemporary things we have, you know? And if farming is hard work today, it was harder back in Jesus' day. But no matter the time or the place, the farmer had to wait for that seed to sprout and to grow and to produce a crop worth harvesting. And there are a lot of things that have to be done during that waiting period, right? Including watering and weeding and keeping away pests. But there's one main thing that the farmer simply cannot control, and that is the weather. And so the farmer needs to be patient, especially in Jesus' day, for the autumn and the spring rains. Because that's all he could do is wait. He can't do anything to make it rain. He has to wait because he's not God, and he understands that. But he knows if he does wait, eventually the rains will come and the seed will grow. Of course, the key word here is eventually, right? And that word eventually is a word that sums up both our hope and our expectation, even though eventually is kind of vague, you know? Think about it. Eventually doesn't mean right now. It's kind of like whenever, you know, your kids would ask you for something, you might say, well, later on, or, you know, eventually we'll get to that or something like that. So it doesn't mean right now. It's a little vague. It could mean maybe later, tomorrow, or I don't know, next month or next year. But eventually it will happen. It will happen sooner or later. The truth is, we just don't know when. Now, when James encourages us in our text to be patient in these verses, the Greek word that he uses is sometimes translated long-suffering. And we usually don't use the word long-suffering anymore. And besides, the words long and suffering together makes us a little uncomfortable. After all, who wants to suffer, especially for a long time? But the Greek word here actually means to have long patience, or to not lose heart, or to persevere patiently and bravely while enduring whatever misfortunes and troubles that we're going through. Think back to the illustration of the farmer that James gives us. The farmer has to endure droughts and attacks by strange bugs and hailstorms and any other kinds of natural disasters that might happen. Animals coming in that want to eat his crops, or robbers that come in that might want to steal the crops or his animals, you know. And through all this, though, the farmer endures because he knows that the rain must come eventually, and that eventually there will be a profit from his efforts. And so, using the farmer as our example, James tells us to be patient, to stand firm. And now, what's interesting about that phrase, stand firm, again, is that it's more literally translated, establish your hearts. In other words, we need to establish or fix or to make fast and immovable our hearts, okay, in the matter. In other words, we need to be firmly decided. So in the case of you and me, James is describing someone who is so certain about the future that he cannot be moved at whatever present troubles are going against him. And I'll have to admit that that can be hard to do sometimes. But as a Christian, it's something that we can do, because James tells us that Jesus is eventually coming. Still, you know, you look at the calendar and you think, well, gee, it's been 2,000 years around that now. And some people think, okay, and maybe he's not. And they've given up, you know, they've lost patience and they've just said, forget it. But a lot of us have not given up. And so we wait expectantly for the Lord's coming. And we know that he will eventually come. But again, that key word is eventually. And because we know that, we wait patiently. And we stand firm patiently, remembering that the Lord is not slow in keeping his promises, 2 Peter 3:9. As some understand slowness, he is patient, not wanting anyone to perish, but everyone to come to repentance. In other words, Jesus has not forgotten us. We can't forget Jesus, okay? Jesus said that he'd come back, and he will. And when he does, he'll set things right, eventually. I don't know when. You don't know when. Those people who think they know when, they're lying. They're kidding themselves. So for now, we wait. Okay? And we wait expectantly. The second way that we learn to wait is to wait graciously. Again, there in James chapter 5, this time in verse 9, James tells us, don't grumble against each other, brothers, or you will be judged. The judge is standing at the door. In other words, when you're tired and you're scared and you're angry, you need to watch what you say and how you say it, you know? Or when you feel backed into a corner and your life somehow feels like it's crumbling down around you, when you feel betrayed and attacked and harassed and lied to and lied about, when your world just seems to be turned totally upside down, you got to watch what you say. You got to watch your actions, right? Your word and your actions need to match your faith, like we talked about before. Again, back in verse 9, though, with all that, the Greek word that's translated complain in some translations means to groan or to sigh. In the NIV, it says to grumble. And that's what we do when we've had just about enough and we don't feel like taking it anymore. We grumble, we mumble, we moan, we groan. And when our spirit gets so upset and so overwhelmed that we sigh inwardly and outwardly, that pressure just begins to build up within inside us to the point of being released in attack mode. And when we do that, we're often next to the people that we love and we care about. And then they become the objects of our attack, even though they are not the reason for the attack. And so our brothers and sisters and family and friends get abused by our anger, by our frustrations, by our distress. And sometimes we grumble because, you know, we look at others and we think, well, you've got it easy. But you don't know what they're going through. You say you've got more money. You don't know that. It might look like they've got money, but they might be in debt, you know? They're happily married. Maybe it looks like that way on the outside, but maybe not, you know? Or they have perfect children, or they don't treat you right or look at you right. Well, you know, the list can go on and on about your own complaints and grumbles that you have no idea if it's true or not, but you make up this list. But the point is, it's really easy to get hypercritical of the people that you love the most. But that doesn't make it right. And that's because grumbling and complaining doesn't help. It destroys instead. It crumbles relationships. It can destroy our marriage, tear apart our family. It can destroy our closest friendships. Not only that, but grumbling, it doesn't help our relationship with God either. You can go back and think about the Israelites, right? Whenever they began to grumble against the Lord, did things work out good? No. As a matter of fact, they wandered around for 40 years before they eventually got to the promised land because they grumbled against the Lord. And even in wandering, they continued to grumble. It wasn't good. Verse 9 again talks more about that, and he says clearly, don't grumble against each other, brother. Or don't grumble against each other, brothers, or you will be judged. And judged by whom? By God, right? He says the judge is standing at the door. And this is not Jesus standing at the door all sort of friendly, you know, inviting you to fellowship like over in Revelation 3 and verse 20. I stand at the door and knock, come on in. And that's because this is Jesus standing ready to come in judgment upon the judger, you see. So, how does all this help us to learn to wait graciously? Well, ask yourself, can I, with God's help, maintain a gentle and gracious spirit when hard times hit? Possibly. Can I smile when they throw me into the fiery furnace? It's possible. It really is. But I know it's not easy. But if you can't smile in those situations or have a gentle and gracious spirit, at least you can refrain from snapping at your loved ones, right, and your friends. Think about it. Nothing destroys Christian unity quicker than complaining and grumbling about things. How many churches have been split? You know, how many good ministries have been ruined? How many servants of the Lord have been discouraged to the point of quitting or quit because of the thoughtlessness that is and grumbling of other believers? How many friends and families have been broken up because of all that? Again, James tells us that when hard times hit, that we first need to wait expectantly, wait graciously, and third, wait patiently. Wait patiently. Again, back in James chapter 5, this time in verses 10 and 11, James gives us examples to take courage in, saying, brothers, as an example of patience in the face of suffering, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord. As you know, we consider blessed those who have persevered. You have heard of Job's perseverance and have seen the Lord, what the Lord finally brought about. The Lord is full of compassion and mercy. When things start to fall down around us, I often think about being in a tornado. And yeah, I've been in one, okay? What you've really got to do is get down and hunker down and hold firmly on, right? And sometimes that's the only thing that we can do in life when everything is swirling around us going crazy. You just need to hang on. You see, that's why God blesses those who persevere and those who patiently endure. Because sometimes that's all we can do. But still, that's a great thing in the Lord to wait upon God. Think about the prophets that James mentioned. And of course, he didn't list anybody, but they all spoke in the name of the Lord. And what happened to them? Well, they're the ones that the writer of Hebrews was thinking about when he spoke about the high cost of faithfulness to God over in Hebrews chapter 11 and verses 35 through 38. There, the writer tells us that others were tortured and refused to be released so that they might gain a better resurrection. Some faced jeers and flogging, while still others were chained and put in prison. They were stoned. They were sawn in two. They were put to death by the sword. They went about in sheepskins and goatskins, destitute, persecuted, and mistreated. The world was not worthy of them. They wandered in deserts and mountains and in caves and in holes in the ground. You think, wow, who were all these others talked about there in verse 35? Well, I could think of a number of people, but one of the people that comes to my mind is the people during the time of the prophet Elijah, you know, who wouldn't bow down to Baal in the time of Jezebel and Ahab, you know. There were also people like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego who wouldn't kneel before the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar had built in the time of Daniel. And there are many others, just like these faithful few, who believed 100% in their faith in God, that their faith in God was worth more than their life itself. And of course, today there are believers in the world right now today who are being harassed and beaten and sometimes killed because of their faith in Jesus Christ. And you know, we think we have it hard in our country, but I'm talking about other countries. And it's happening right now. You don't always hear about it in the news because they don't care about it. But it's happening all the time. But still they persevere, right? And they patiently endure, even to the point of death. Think about Job again, like James encourages us. Job was identified in the book of Job as a man who was blameless and upright and feared God and shunned evil. He faced test after test after test after test over and over and over again. And even though he was cast down and discouraged, he never gave up his faith. Even though when he had friends, people considered friends, come and accuse him of doing wrong when he did nothing wrong. And even when his wife comes in and tries to encourage him to curse God and die, instead, he chose to bless the name of the Lord. And just how in the world did the prophets survive? How did Job survive? Well, they survived because they knew who God was. And that means that everything in life comes down really to one very important question. And that is, who do you personally believe about God? What do you personally believe about God? Who do you think God is? What sort of God is he? Well, James tells us that Job and the prophets understood that the Lord is full of compassion and mercy. Right there back in verse 11, right? Now, we look at that phrase, full of compassion. It's actually from a Greek word that's only used in the New Testament and only in the book of James right here. It could also be translated as full of kindness or full of tenderness or maybe exceedingly compassionate. But, you know, think back to Job. Job went through an awful lot, but in the end, because of his faithfulness, God blessed him with more than what he started with. But, to be fair, it doesn't always work out that way, especially for the prophets. Sometimes they receive their reward in this life, but more often than not, the prophets received their reward in the next life when they got to see the Lord face to face. It comes down to you and me, right? How will we survive when hard times hit? How are we going to get through all this COVID nonsense? I think more people are struggling from all the restrictions on us from COVID than COVID itself. Businesses destroyed, families broken up, churches divided, businesses closed, churches closed, families just destroyed. Mental health, suicides. Did COVID kill them? Indirectly, yes. But again, it depends upon our view of God. Do we believe and trust that our God is full of tenderness and overflowing with mercy? If that's our view of God, then even though we may be knocked down by the circumstances, whatever they are, we know that we won't stay down forever because eventually this life or the next, the Lord will pick us up. But again, life isn't fair. We can't do anything about that, though. We can't. But we can control how we respond, especially if we believe that God is in control of our lives, and that the Lord is full of compassion and mercy, and that Jesus is coming back soon. And so if we believe that, then we will find a way to hang on and wait expectantly, and we will find a way to keep from complaining and grumbling, and we will find a way to stand firm in the Lord and to wait patiently. And why again? Because we know that the Lord is coming again. And we know that the Lord rewards those who earnestly seek him. The only thing we've got to do is hurry up and wait. Think about it. Life is all about learning to wait on the Lord. And in that process, we learn not to grumble or panic, but instead trust and obey. And that's because as Christians, we know that God is going to resolve whatever it is that we're going through. But, you know, we don't know how, and we don't know when, but we do know that he's going to do it. And I'm not giving up. I'm waiting on God, and I pray that everyone else is too. Now, I want to just throw in a disclaimer that I know that there are people suffering terribly right now in the world, you know, and the last thing that we want to do is come across callously or invite the impression that patience and suffering is easy. No one ever said that. It's not easy. The only thing that James is telling us is to remember that the Lord is full of compassion and mercy. And if we can focus on that, that God loves us and he's full of compassion and mercy, and that he is eventually coming back and he will reward our patience and faithfulness, then that can help us to make it through whatever it is that we're dealing with. To hold fast to the Lord, to look to Jesus as the author and perfecter of our faith. And when the Lord's purposes are finally made clear, we'll be glad that we didn't cut and run, but that we stood firm in the Lord and waited on the Lord expectantly, graciously, and patiently. And if there's anyone not a Christian, of course you need to quit putting it off, right? And admit that you've sinned and fallen short of the glory of God, realizing that God sent Jesus to the cross so that we might have the forgiveness of sins and be saved. And if you want that and haven't got that, you need to confess Jesus as your Lord and Savior. Commit yourself to him by being immersed in the watery grave for the forgiveness of your sins. And then rising up out of the water, well, you're born again to live your life for him until Jesus comes back again, or you go to be with him. For those of us who are already Christians, again, we need to remember to wait on the Lord and to help others do the same. They won't be disappointed. And so if anyone needs to come forward this morning, whether it's to share or to seek prayer or to become a Christian for the first time, we want to invite you to come forward as together we stand and sing.